hear it coming out of here, but I don't know where it's coming out.
This is Lacrosse Talk with your hosts, Dan Matthews and Max Frater.
Well, folks, I guess we had a few technical difficulties there. Our apologies, set up, tear down, reset up equipment. Things are bound to go awry, but we've been busy as all get out around here at Lacrosse Talk. I'm Dan Matthews with Max Frater. You are listening to Lacrosse Talk, North America's first and most comprehensive show dedicated to the sport of lacrosse. And Max, we thought we had a barn burner yesterday with Furman and Canisius. Our first broadcast on the Lax Worm Radio Experience, technical difficulties there. We ended up on Major League Lacrosse Radio, which was fine. Had a great game, though, but today, the Marquette Golden Eagles, an overtime win over undefeated Richmond, and right now, they may be the hottest team in lacrosse.
I think definitely. I mean, we've been looking at this matchup for the past 2 weeks, watching both of these teams storm out of the gates. Marquette, the Cardiac Eagles, man, they do not play a game that isn't full of trauma, and this one is not excluded, too. Pulling it out 11-10 in overtime, graduate attackman Jordan Greenfield puts in the game winner for the Eagles. They're now 3-0. Finally got themselves into the top 25 rankings, something that you and I had been calling for after wins over ranked opponents Lehigh and Hofstra. They got it this week. It was their chance to prove it against a very hot Richmond team as well. Fantastic game between the two of them, and the Golden Eagles pull it out. They're 3-0.
They are 3-0. They head into a stretch of their schedule of very winnable games right now. Detroit at home next week. Ohio State, who has been kind of up and down so far. Then they're at Jacksonville, at Mercer, at Georgetown, at Villanova, and at Bellarmine. This is one of the things that they face. They play a lot of road games, and that's the remarkable thing about what they're doing right now. This is 3-0. This is 3-0 on the road.
It's a road that's going to be much tougher for the Golden Eagles as far as making it into the tournament because they have a massive roadblock in the Pioneers in their way. As compared to the team they played today, Richmond, I mean, Richmond got themselves into the tournament last year, into the play-in game, even with a 6-10 record, because they were able to go through the Atlantic Sun Conference, now the Southern Conference, and I think Richmond still has that opportunity. I think it was a huge win for Marquette between the two. Who needed it more? It was definitely the Golden Eagles, because their chances of beating Denver and winning the Big East, slim to none. But if they could run the rest of the table, beat guys like Villanova, beat Georgetown, they have three great wins on their record now. Those could be things that propel them into the tournament, maybe even the play-in game towards the end of the season if they're able to keep compiling these wins.
Yeah, the other big story of the weekend, the weather. Not only was it snowy here and games had to be moved today from Denver down to the Air Force Academy, but the weather's been miserable all over the country. We talked a couple weeks ago with Eamon McEnany about this. He thinks we need to figure out a way to push the season back. I'll tell you, there's one coach who's hotter than the devil right now, and that's Scott Marr at Albany. He may have lost his superstar for who knows how long because of the weather, and they had a miserable trip that they're still, as I understand it, they're back there now, but a miserable trip back to Albany in which Coach Marr had to keep getting off the bus and cleaning off the windows.
Well, you know, Coach Marr can't be too upset. I mean, his team still picked up the win over Drexel, even without Tuareton winner Miles Thompson or his cousin Ty. But you're right. With the weather, I was able to watch the Princeton-Hofstra game that they played in New Jersey this past weekend, and it was just a mess. I mean, guys were slipping and sliding all over the field. The ball was flying all over the place. I couldn't even imagine being a goalie, even with the orange balls as compared to the white with the snow backdrop. It would just, oh, my goodness. I don't even – I commend those guys, everybody who played in the snow this weekend, because it's already hard enough to stop the ball when it's flying at you 90 miles an hour. Try putting an entire background of white snow around you and the home team's wearing white. I'm not exactly against the early start for NCAA lacrosse. I think it would be nice for them to finish up the same time that the semester ends so the students can be a part of the experience rather than later in the month for Memorial Day. But at the same time, I mean, watching this weekend, even watching our game, can tell it has an effect on the way that these games come out.
Yeah, it definitely does. And we've got a big show lined up today. We'll talk a little bit about the weather with our first guest after the break. That's Mark Dixon, ESPN analyst. We'll also talk with Trey Lanthier about the MCLA. Lots of goings and movings going on in the MCLA this weekend. Top-ranked Colorado and Colorado State started their seasons. We also will speak with Brian Shanahan, our NLL insider. He's got to have a lot to say about what's going on there. We'll also speak with Jack Coyne, NCAA Division II and Division III coverage for us. We're going to wrap up today's show with a conversation with Air Force head coach Eric Saramet. All of that and a whole lot more right here on Lacrosse Talk on the Laxworm Radio Experience. We are back on Lacrosse Talk. I'm Dan Matthews with Max Frater. We're going to bring in a very special guest. That is the Laxworm, creator of the Laxworm Radio Experience. Worm, how are you?
Dan, I am doing great, Max. I just want to call you guys up because we had our first game yesterday. And I don't know who those two guys that were calling that game, but they were outstanding. I don't know if you listened to those two guys.
We thought they were all right. You know, there's always a little bit of a hurdle here and there, but we sure appreciate the compliment. And I'll tell you, we had a good time.
Now, I thought you guys, I just wanted to call. I'm not going to break up your show because I know you got some great guests as usual, but I just wanted to call in and say you guys did a terrific job yesterday. It was the best kickoff we could have had for a live game broadcast, so I thank you guys for doing such a great job.
We appreciate the compliment, and we look forward to bringing the world 80-plus games on the Laxworm Radio Experience.
Absolutely. That was just the start. Looking forward to a lot more coming, but we appreciate you calling in, Worm.
Yeah, no problem. And by the way, if it's 80 games, you better get some water and hydrate those pipes because we've got to do a lot of talking.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. There's going to be more coming. Everybody check that schedule at laxwormradioexperience.com. A lot of exciting action. We're back with you live next week from Fort Collins, Colorado, with Colorado State University taking on Boston College. A little bit of MCLA action.
Well, Dan, Max, I won't hold you any longer. I just wanted to thank you guys for doing such a great job. And I'm sitting here out east enjoying your show. So I am going to throw it back to you guys and let you do what you do. So thanks a lot, and we'll talk soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Worm.
Thank you, Worm.
That is the one and only Worm, and let's jump to the one and only Mark Dixon. Dix, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
The talk of the weekend has got to be the weather, and there are so many debates and conversations that go on about the weather, about February lacrosse. Is there a way to remedy this situation, and if so, what would it be?
I think the remedy is to push the season back to March, where the way it used to be. I know certainly when I played 20 years ago, but even as recent as maybe 10, 12 years ago, put it back to that March time frame. I know at that point you still can't control if there will be some snow or some ice or some other inclement weather, but at least you're decreasing the odds of that taking place. Now, on the back end of that, again, things have changed. Teams no longer play 10, 11 game regular seasons anymore. They're 15, 16 games. So where do you fit those extra games in? Well, I think you have to play midweek games, you know, throughout the entire season in March and April. Or the other talk on the back end has been extending the season and having your championships played in the month of June. I don't know what the right answer is, but certainly what we've seen over the last 2 weeks is not the way we want the game presented. It is not what we want for the student athletes, and it's just really not good for the sport.
My vote would be for what it's worth to the rest of the world, push it back to March, have a combination of midweek games as well as pushing the tournament back. Maybe, you know, we've been doing it Memorial Day weekend. How about pushing it back to mid-June, maybe even as far as Father's Day weekend? What a great way to go spend the weekend with your son at the NCAA lacrosse tournament.
Well, I don't, you know, I think there's a couple things you have to keep in mind. One is liability and cost to the universities. Most of them close with final exams probably mid-May. So even in the NCAA tournament, you have your student athletes living on a per diem provided by the NCAA. Some other scenarios come into play. But how about this on the back end as well? You start talking about going into Father's Day weekend. You're talking about the club scene. And even recruiting camps are going to be affected.
Sure.
Because that's when the summer season really gets underway with recruiting camps and team camps and showcases and that kind of thing. So I think right now there's just a lot of moving parts to this discussion, and we'll have to see how it all plays out.
Mark, we appreciate you coming on the show this week. Regardless of what the three of us think, this is the way that the season is playing out so far in 2015. A ton of snow throughout the East Coast and here on the west side of the country in Denver. I want to talk about the action on the field. We know that this week there were a couple of pretty solid ranked matchups going on, but the one that we didn't expect to be a good matchup was Loyola and Holy Cross, and I think the Greyhounds might have overlooked their own matchup as well, and they came out on the wrong side of it, losing 13-12, didn't lose a single Patriot League game all last season. Now they're sitting at 0-1. What happened to the Greyhounds this past weekend?
Well, I think when you take a look at that game, you know, Holy Cross is a team over the last 4 years, 17-43. They haven't had a winning season since 1988. You know, I know Charlie Toomey fairly well, and I don't think he lets his kids overlook anyone. I think they were outplayed. And that was a game that Holy Cross was up 13-9, 13-10, so it wasn't like they came back or if it was back and forth. I mean, Holy Cross really took control of that game in the second half. And when I look at Loyola, I mean, you have to give all the credit in the world to Judd Lattimore and the Holy Cross Crusaders, and there's even chatter of Jim Morrissey, the coach who stepped down at the end of last season, that this is his team and this is the group that he put together. But I think if you look at Loyola, they're really struggling in the defensive midfield. Like, you lose Josh Hawkins 2 years ago to graduation. Now Pat Laconi is gone. Scott Ratliff gone. You know, it was Pat Frazier was sort of the long stick midi last year. He's now down close. So I just think in the middle of the field defensively, especially in the defensive midfield, Loyola really has to find itself, really has to find an identity. And again, you know, we're talking about a team that lost Justin Ward, an All-American attackman. Jack Runkle between the pipes was the most outstanding player when they won the NCAA championship in 2012. And then you graduate the best defenseman in all of lacrosse last year, Joe Fletcher. So three major holes to fill, and then you throw Laconi in at the short stick D-mid position. I think, you know, Loyola's looking for leadership, and they're looking for some better defensive play.
Dix, Joe Amplo's Marquette Golden Eagles, 3-0, all of them on the road, all of them one-goal games. They're now 8-1 in one-goal games since starting their program. They've got a lot more games on the road, but is this a team that can make a run in the Big East? I don't know that they can beat Denver, but can they make a run that's going to be adequate enough to get them into the tournament at the end of the season?
You know, I think that the early season is all about winning and moving forward, because you don't know if a win in February you're going to be able to cash it in come tournament selection time. Scheduling can be an odd thing. You feel like you put together a solid schedule and you get two or three nice out-of-conference wins that you think are going to have merit, and then those teams don't do as well, so some have more value than others at the end of the year. But the thing I love about Marquette is they're road warriors. They don't get a lot of home games being out in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And they come from behind, a three-goal deficit, actually a four-goal deficit last weekend up in Hofstra, come back and beat the Pride by a goal. And then today in Richmond, they were down by three and scored some late goals to force overtime. And then they got the job done real quick against a very good Richmond Spider team. So you kind of hit the nail on the head. I don't know if Marquette's going to have the juice to knock off a Denver, you know, even maybe a Villanova. Who knows? But this team, in only their third year of competition, they're playing great lacrosse. And to start out 3-0 with the one-goal wins and 8-1, I actually didn't know that statistic. That's phenomenal for such a young team. And you have to tip your cap to Joe Amplo and the job he's doing in the Midwest with the Marquette ball club.
So, Mark, the Eagles in a position to still possibly make the tournament despite having Denver in that same conference not having a great opportunity to win. I want to look at a team that kind of had a similar situation to Marquette, had to win every single game, had to make their schedule look good in order to do it, and that's Johns Hopkins. Now that they're in the Big Ten, we thought that they were positioning themselves to have a better opportunity, so if they maybe don't win those out-of-conference games, they can still make the tournament. This week they played UNC in a tight game, and they lost that one. They're still searching for an identity offensively, and they put most of the heavy lifting on Ryan Brown. Do you think they're relying too much on the senior attackman?
I would argue and say that they probably rely too much on Will Stanwyck. And Stanwyck is the conductor. He's the guy that really makes everything go. He's the unquestioned leader of that offense. Now, with that being said, Ryan Brown, for my money, is the best shooter in college lacrosse. But oftentimes, the two go hand in hand. Stanwyck needs to kind of free himself up to get the ball to Brown. But I think that when you look at Ryan Brown, he's a guy who's taken more control of the offense. He's made some tremendous plays and has a ton of points in the first four games of the season. But he's also made some mistakes, and I think some of those mistakes were pretty obvious yesterday against the Tar Heels, maybe some ill-advised shots and maybe trying to do too much. I think the midfield really needs to start to emerge for Johns Hopkins. Players like Connor Reed, like Colton Catone, they need to be more consistent, and they need to take the pressure off the attack unit in and of itself, but also Wells Stanwyck. I mean, I think we've learned that if you don't slide to Wells, meaning playing him straight up, don't be affected by the two-man game that picks behind the cage. If you can stay on his gloves and stay with that matchup, that limits his feeding ability. And one goal and no assist yesterday against the Tar Heels. So they did a real nice job on him. Ryan Brown's having a good season. Is he trying to do too much? Yes, but the offense runs through Wells Stanwyck, and I think right now the attack in general for Hopkins needs more midfield play.
Mark, a great weekend for the Ivy League, a not-so-great weekend for the Big Ten. Maryland, the other team that faced a big upset. What do we make out of the early season for both of these conferences right now?
Well, you know, I find it interesting, people, and you're not doing it, but, you know, people kind of trying to bag on the Big Ten. You know, Maryland and Hopkins lose this weekend. Penn State loses to a scrappy Villanova team. Michigan loses to the national runner-up from a year ago in Notre Dame, and, you know, Ohio State's the lone team that wins, and then Rutgers loses to Virginia. So, you know, the conference is 1-5 this weekend. But I think with the Big Ten, I think it's more about the potential for the future than it is for the present. I mean, obviously you have Johns Hopkins and Maryland in the mix, which really makes that conference bona fide in terms of tradition and powerhouses and such. But, you know, I think early on, you know, Ohio State's coming off of a down year last year. Penn State had a down year. You know, Rutgers had their most successful season under Brian Brecht, and Michigan's a team that's gone 2-0 for the first time in their program history before losing to Notre Dame. So, you know, I think people need to look more at the positives, because it's such a positive sign for the sport that, you know, not only do you have a conference in the Big Ten, but look who's in it, and hopefully they can blaze a trail for others. But with that being said, the Ivy League is playing some really strong lacrosse right now, and Yale beat Maryland yesterday, and they did it with a balanced effort, good goaltending, and stout defense in the fourth quarter. You know, Maryland, I think, fell prey to what we saw so much last year when things didn't work out for the Terps, and that was Mike Chen and Chuck dodging and trying to create the five Terrapins standing around and watching him. You know, I think we saw that yesterday but now Chen and Chuck's gone, and it's Matt Rambo who has the ball in the stick most of the time, and, you know, guys just kind of stand around and watch. So, you know, Maryland, they got to find a little bit more consistency on the offensive end of the field. Yale, I love the job Michael Quinn did. He can play long stick midi. He played down close a little bit against Rambo yesterday, did a great job. Eric Natale, their goaltender, came up big in a lot of key situations. And Conrad Overbeck, who's been doing it, he seems like he's been at Yale for 20 years. You know, he's been scoring a lot of goals for them and playing great lacrosse. And, you know, that's a really, really good lacrosse team. So, you know, the Ivies are going to be strong. They're established. The Big Ten's just getting started. But, you know, I think there's room to see the growth and the potential in both.
Mark, last question for you. In the matchup between Albany and Drexel, we saw Tuerton winner Lyle Thompson go down in the second quarter. Only had one goal, one assist throughout his time on the field before he was taken off. but the Great Danes still ran the table 15-8. Do you feel like this was more of a statement win for Albany, saying, you know what, we have the best player in lacrosse, but we can still put up goals even if he's not out there on the field?
Yeah, I think Albany is a dangerous team, and that's another team in transition. You talk about the losses of Miles and Ty Thompson, but also I think a big loss for them is their long stick midfielder, Doug Knight. And so for not only them to score 15 goals against Drexel, but to hold them to 8 when Lyle goes down, I think that speaks a lot to the depth and how Albany has developed. They've got a good-looking freshman, Connor Fields, I think his name is. They got a transfer from Onondaga Community College, last name Oaks, who put up 4 goals yesterday. You know, you think about Onondaga, I mean, there's a reason why they win the JUCO every year, you know, in the national championship and national semifinals, you know, by combining like 40 goals, because they can play. And you look at the players they've produced over the last several years. You know, you've got Jerome Thompson and Jeremy Thompson who played at Syracuse. Jerome, not so much as Jeremy, but you got Randy Stotts at Syracuse. Now you've got Warren Hill, the goaltender at Syracuse. And that's a team, that's a program that churns out a lot of players, and Albany has benefited from some of them. So is Syracuse. But I just think Albany, Lyle Thompson gives that team so much confidence. When you play with him, he's so freewheeling. He's so supportive. He gets everybody involved. And when he went down with the injury, I think it was big for the Great Danes to plan and really hang an impressive win over a Drexel team that's a year removed from the NCAA tournament.
Dix, thanks so much. We appreciate it. We'll look forward to seeing you in the Mile High City in the not-too-distant future, I hope.
Oh, love to come to Denver. Always a great time in Denver, and I appreciate you guys having me.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
Take care, guys.
That's Mark Dixon, ESPN analyst, one of a long line of fabulous NCAA Division I analysts that we've been afforded the opportunity to meet, talk with in person, and have on the show. And it's just so much fun to be able to get all of these different opinions.
With him and Quint and Eamon and Kark and all of their coverage of NCAA, I mean, those guys are the go-to when you have any questions on what goes on in the field or what's going on around the league. The thing that I found the most interesting, though, is when you're not only talking to analysts of the game about moving the season back to the beginning of February, but you're also talking to former players. I mean, Dix and Eamon and Quint and Paul, they're all former players. So you're not just taking the opinion of guys who are watching from afar and haven't played in these situations and haven't played on Memorial Day weekend. You're listening to guys who have been in the trenches, and they say, you know what, I've played in weather like this. It's awful. It affects the game. It affects your equipment. It affects the pace of play. Just get rid of it. So I think you have to take that into account, too, when you're hearing these guys say, move the season back to where it was. I did it. I went into late May, early June, player in college. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, it really isn't. You mentioned Kark. Paul Carcaterra will join us in this same time slot next week. So we have yet to duplicate our NCAA D1 analyst, and looking forward to talking to Carcaterra next week. But even more so, looking forward to talking to Trey Lanthier on the other side of this commercial break. You're listening to the Lax. You're listening to Lacrosse Talk on the Lax Worm Radio Experience. On Lacrosse Talk, Dan Matthews and Max Frater with you, and it's time to jump in to some MCLA lacrosse with our MCLA analyst Trey Lanthier. Trey, action is going full bore now, is it not?
Yeah, we've got all the best teams playing out across the MCLA, and it's great to see. It's great to see some of the top ranked teams in action. So this is the best time of year.
Trey, the one thing that I want to jump all over right now is the instability of the LSA right now, really both at the D1 and D2 level. I look at it, and honestly, I know LSU's playing great lacrosse, and I've not seen anything from their game today against SMU. But is there anybody worthy in the LSA of playing in that national tournament come May?
Man, it's hard. It's hard. I mean, the LSA D2 doesn't even really have a tournament bid, but Sam Houston State seems to have that conference locked down for now. But in the D1 ranks, you're right. It's totally up in the air. LSU's looked really good to start out the season. They're now 5-0, and they actually didn't play SMU today. SMU canceled the game due to weather. So, and I'm not sure how bad the weather in Texas could be, but SMU losing to Oklahoma this weekend, and Oklahoma prior to that point was really considered a lowly opponent pretty much across the entire country. So, a not-so-great showing this weekend, considering Texas also got blown out versus Chapman, and they got blown out versus Sonoma State in their season. It's just, it's clear that the LSA is the bottom of the MCLA when it comes to of contenders.
Trey, thanks for joining us on the show again on this Sunday afternoon. I want to go from the bottom contenders in the LSA to the top in the SLC. And you mentioned some of the better teams finally getting their season going here in the MCLA. Taking a look at Grand Canyon, we've talked a lot about the Lopes in this preseason, what they're going to look like with Carson Barton back on the field, and their transfer at attack, Tyler Eckeroth. Tell us a little bit about what the Lopes brought to the table this week in a blowout game over San Diego.
I mean, what they showed was that they have a lot of depth on this offense. I mean, Carson Barton is back. Tyler Eckeroth is a stack player. He's got pretty much all the tools. He's actually playing at defensive midfield right now. And we'll see if that changes, because some breaking news actually came out of Grand Canyon in that Joe Ballesteri quit the team. He was transferred from Stevenson, had 22 goals at Stevenson. So that's going to be a bit of a hit to their midfield. But I still think this is a team that could easily contend for a title with the play of Gene Farrell, Carson Barton, as I mentioned earlier, both Canadian products who play a unique brand of lacrosse in the MCLA. And then there's the Eckeroth brothers out up the midfield. And you also have a faceoff specialist who was an All-American last year in Ron Hamway. Luciano DiDonatis was an All-American LSM last year. There's talent on this roster from start to finish. What's most interesting to me is that they brought in Jeff Guy, or they brought back Jeff Guy. He was coaching at Princeton for a little bit, helping out there. And he's now back with the GCU program. And he has revamped this defense. They look great against USD, and I look forward to seeing what they can do against some of the top offenses in the SLC.
When we look at the SLC, obviously we've got Arizona State. We've got Chapman. Chapman, big wins this weekend. Where is Chapman going to fit into this picture at the end of the year?
Well, it's a good question. I think that Chapman, considering how they started last year, I mean, they'll take anything, and They beat Texas handily, but then they actually played a very close game against Sonoma State today and won that one 7-6. And in the end, a win is a win, but I don't think Sonoma State is nearly as good as some of the teams that Chapman's going to play once they get to conference play, against ASU. And I would like to say Santa Barbara, but obviously they're not going to be in that conversation as of right now. And even Arizona, to an extent, is going to give Chapman fits, whether in the regular season or in the SLC playoff.
Let's take a look at the D2 side of things for the SLC. And you've got a lot of teams who are sitting at 2-0, 3-0, 4-0. We mentioned in the preseason Concordia taking down the likes of some Division I opponents. Cal State Fullerton is sitting at 4-0. UC San Diego 2-0. Not normally a conference that we talk about when it comes to Division II, but are they starting to make a name for themselves?
I think they are. I think the West Coast Division II ranks are improving, especially this season. I think Concordia has had some great showings. They've had three wins against Division I opponents, and they beat Chapman in a scrimmage against them. So Concordia had a great great regular season to start off, and I think Josh Fagan and Destin Seguin are both great players who are going to be contributors throughout the season. And Cal State Fullerton, averaging over 23 goals a game, hard to imagine them not being in the conversation at the end of the year. I think the SLC is starting to possibly reach the point where it's more than just a one-bid conference. And I'm curious to see whether or not the polls reflect that when they're released on Tuesday.
Trey, let's shift back over to the D1 side in the game we're following very closely right now. The last update I have is the Cal Bears with a 9-8 lead over Santa Barbara. Santa Barbara really struggling, and I know Mike Allen certainly is not happy with the performance of his squad early season. This team, we talked about it a little bit last week, is facing an absolutely daunting task If they lose to Cal, they've got Arizona State. They might be able to win a home game against UCLA. And then they get Colorado, Grand Canyon, and Westminster. They could realistically be looking at 2-6 or 2-7 to start out this year. No way they get into the tournament if they start out like that.
No, no. And earlier I was referencing Chapman's start from last season, but what this has become for UCSB is far worse than anything we saw from Chapman last season. And Chapman did start 1-4, but it was against a lot of formidable opponents. And Santa Barbara right now is losing to bad teams. And Stanford, all respect to Drew Burke and that program right there, but that's a team that Santa Barbara should be handling. I mean, you look at what ASU was able to do to Stanford in a 17-4 win, and then UC Santa Barbara loses to them 8-5. It's not looking good right now for Santa Barbara, I think, especially with this Cal game. You mentioned that's going on right now. Nick Sheehan playing very well for Cal in that game right now. But I think regardless of how that game turns out, Santa Barbara is in for a very rough season. They lost a lot from last year, and a couple guys walked out the door inexplicably, including Casey Mix, who was a star freshman last season for that team. And missing those pieces has really proved to be tough for this offense, because it's the offense. It's nothing on the defensive side that Santa Barbara's really struggling with. It's that they just can't score goals.
So Santa Barbara on the way down, currently sitting at number 7 in the top 25 poll in Division I. A team that's trying to make their way up there is Georgia Tech. And, Trey, when we talked about the Yellow Jackets last week, you said that these guys were playing with a little bit of a fire in their belly after their head coach, Ken Lovick, was taking some shots with a little bit of a controversy as their season began. They picked up 2 more wins this week with over Auburn and Florida. Strength of schedule not looking that strong until they come across Florida State, but is this a team that we could start to look at and consider them as one of the elite teams in the MCLA?
Oh, absolutely. I think that Georgia Tech, at the very least, has to be entering that conversation of SCLC contender. And then at the MCLA level, I think that defense goes a long way, and I think so far they've proven this year that they've got a defense that can shut down a lot of teams. And Matt Sommerfeld is one of the best goalies in the country. He's been holding down the fort for them in front of the net. And I think that they play great team ball. Coach Ken Lovick does a great job of helping all these guys distribute rather than look to become individual gamers. And it's great to see. It's great to see them succeeding at the level that they're succeeding at. But I think they're going to have some trouble when they run into teams like Florida State and then potentially Virginia Tech down the line, as well as some of the other SCLC's top teams like Liberty.
Jumping to the RMLC for just a minute, Trey. Colorado and Colorado State went down to West Texas, and quite frankly, each had their way with Connecticut and Texas State. Kind of status quo on the D1 side. Colorado, Colorado State, BYU, all successful. Westminster yet to play. But on the Division II side, last year's defending champion Montana State now 0-2 in conference play.
Yeah, and this is a Montana State team that really relied on the efforts of one long pole that they had, Andrew Johnson. And he was really a player that could shut down any opposition. He was huge. He was huge. I got a chance to see him in the NCAA tournament last year, and that guy was a monster. And I think that losing him really shorthanded this defense, and they've had a bit of trouble keeping up and being able to shut down some of the opponents they've faced up against. And the reality is Utah Valley in that conference, Fort Lewis in that conference, both are teams that should be considered probably the favorites to come out of the RMLC, with Montana State starting a little bit slow, and the fact that Montana State was never in the tournament after winning the conference. So I think that there's a lot to be said for what Montana State did last year, but this is a new year, and Fort Lewis has looked very good. Utah Valley coming down from the D1 ranks into the D2 side of things is also looking very good, and I think that Montana State's going to have a tough time working their way back into that contending picture.
Montana State, who won the RMLC last year, struggling to try and repeat their success, but a team that has done so far so good as far as where they were last year as where they are this year is Reinhardt. Another team similar to Georgia Tech, where you could say that their strength of schedule isn't all that great. They're blowing teams out by 19, 20 points, but they have yet to lose a game. And I remember when we were covering the MCLA last year, we spoke a lot about the same things with Western Oregon. And then when they hit the tournament, they fell pretty soon. The first round, I believe. Do you feel like Reinhardt is in that same boat as where Western Oregon was last year, impressing a lot of people by going undefeated and putting up big numbers, but just not playing quality opponents?
Well, Western Oregon last year was just an offensive dynamite. What they were doing with the amount of guys they had who were putting up, I mean, they had three guys in the 90-point range, which is insane. But when you look at what Reinhardt's doing right now, Jeff Mathis is the real deal. This guy, head attack, has scored five goals four times in their early goings and considering how he played last season. But the big question for Reinhardt is going to be, you're right, I mean, how do they perform when they play up against the top teams in the SCLC, and how are they going to perform when they're pushed to the limit more so? Because, you know, they came out of nowhere from last season, and you know, they were very successful last year, but this year, a lot of eyes are on them as a team to potentially work their way deep into the MCLA tournament. But it's hard. It's not easy when you think of the MCLC not really being the top of the D2 chain, whereas, you know, the UMLC produces constant contenders. I think Reinhardt's on the cusp of being a team that could possibly pull off an upset in the tournament. But for right now, they're a little bit too one-dimensional for me to say that they could be that danger team.
Trey, I would be remiss if I didn't mention to the world that President Ken Lovick really called you out in the last couple of days with the D2, D1 banter and the fact that so many D2 teams have had some success at against D1 programs. Gotta love Ken Lovick. He's never afraid to speak his piece. And neither are you, which is kind of really what made it great. But when we look at the MCLA, in each of the divisions, you have 10 to 15 strong teams, and then the rest of it just kind of falls off. So when you look at, and I know that we had Concordia beat Chapman in a scrimmage, and so that was two top-level teams in each of their divisions. But outside of that, we're typically looking at these D2 teams that are knocking off some of the mid- to lower-tier D1 teams. Where is the relevance in that, and what can we make out of it long term? Should there be a restructuring of the divisions?
It's a good question. It's funny that you bring it up. I mean, I've talked to Ken, and I also reached out to some of the people who I work with to try and figure out, you know, is this an accurate criticism, and you know, is the D2 versus D1 conversation one that should be coming up? And I personally think that D2 teams are going to struggle against D1 teams generally. But there are D2 teams that are NAIA schools that are going to be able to put kids on scholarship. And that's always going to give you an upper edge. Concordia is an example of one of those schools that have a great program put together. But still, my viewpoint on it is that if you're able to beat these D1 teams, why would you not be competing at the D1 level and entering the fray? But at the same time, I mean, you know, Ken Lovick's answer to my tweet was that D2 equals D1. They're all equal opportunity. And I agree. I think all the programs in MCLA have their each unique aspects that are great for the quality across the league. But then I look at it and I think, well, if that's truly the case, if we really want to be lumping all them together, why even have two divisions? You know, it used to be based on FCS versus FBS things and football technicalities. I'm not exactly sure how that works out, but it used to have a specific guideline. Now, it's sort of just that's the way it was, so that's the way it is. But if we really want to enter that conversation and expand to a 32-team tournament, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to seeing that. I think it would be interesting, although I will say, and I do have to disagree with Ken Lovick here, I think the D2 teams would struggle a lot in that sort of system.
I tend to agree with that process, but one of the things I look at is I think that if you are an NAIA program with the ability to scholarship athletes, you should not be playing MCLA D2 lacrosse. You should be in Division I.
Absolutely, absolutely. And honestly, there should be an argument made that you shouldn't be in the MCLA at all because it's such a competitive advantage to be able to entice kids with scholarships when most of the kids who are playing in NCAA programs are actually paying to play.
Trey, what should we be looking for next week as we look at the NCAA schedule really start to kick in?
Well, you mentioned that Arizona State Santa Barbara game. I'm looking to the next day when ASU plays Cal Poly. I think that'll be a very good game. Two well-coached teams. And Cal Poly still kind of under the radar in a lot of ways. I don't think anyone's given them the proper credit they deserve yet. And I'm curious to see where they land in the rankings. But aside from that, I think, you know, there's a couple of games coming up. And I don't have the schedule right in front of me, but if you look around the entire MCLA, I think that you've got to be looking at the ASU games as a chance because of how much criticism the Sun Devils have come under in the early goings. It's really going to be curious to see how they perform against top-tier opponents.
Outstanding, Trey. We sure appreciate it. We'll look forward to talking to you next week, and I will look forward to seeing you in 3 weeks.
Absolutely, Dan. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Trey.
That's Trey Lanthier, our MCLA expert. And Trey, just a young gun at Arizona State, much like you coming out of Mesa. Both young guns, very knowledgeable, really make sure he does his work and his research every week. And we can only give him kudos for that, because there's a lot of research to do when you're talking about 230-some-odd programs.
This is very true, and hopefully we can help with that research. I think another big game that people should be looking forward to is the one that we're calling, Dan. Colorado State versus Boston College.
Oh, yeah.
The Golden Eagles come in to Fort Collins. I think that one's going to be a lot of fun. But you're right. I mean, Trey does a great job making sure that he's got all of his bases covered, because when you're talking about, like you said, 200-plus teams, and they all have their different identities, and you got to figure out who the top performers are there, what the schedule's looking like for D2 in the SCLC or D1 in the RMLC. Lots of cover. He does a great job.
It really does. And that game that we're calling next week is going to be an interesting game, because BC has to play Colorado the day before. And so you know they're coming in gunning for number one. Will they exhaust themselves to the point where they can't be competitive with Colorado State? Will they be just as fired up for Colorado State, looking to come out of the weekend with at least two and maybe three wins? They've got Utah Valley as well on Monday or Tuesday. So should be a great game from Fort Collins, Colorado, right here on the Lax Worm Radio Experience. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit of NCAA Division II action, maybe even get into some D3 action as well when we talk with Jack Coyne from Lacrosse Magazine. You're listening to Lacrosse Talk on the Lax Worm Radio Experience. We're back on Lacrosse Talk. Dan Matthews with Max Frater, North America's first and most comprehensive show dedicated to the sport of lacrosse. And when we talk about lacrosse, we talk about all things lacrosse. And now we're going to kick in to some NCAA Division II conversation with our resident expert, Jack Coyne. Jack, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Doing fantastic. And Jack, a little bit of D2 talk, and I don't know how prepared you're going to be, because there's one team I really want to talk about that has really got my curiosity going this year, and that's Mount Olive. They seem to be playing some high-quality lacrosse and maybe on the cusp of breaking into that top 15. Is this a team that can be reckoned with during the course of the year?
If you'd asked me that question at the start of the year, I would have been a little hesitant, just because, you know, they went 13-3 last year, you know, which is a fantastic record. They played a very weak schedule. You know, I think they lost to Limestone twice, and there was one other team that was of any note, and they lost to them as well. They beat Pfeiffer a couple times, but Pfeiffer kind of fallen off at the end of the year. So I thought, you know, they had bumped up their schedule a little bit, added on some quality teams like Mercyhurst. And I would have said, you know, I think maybe their record won't be as good. They might be a better team because they're only in its third year of existence. But then all of a sudden they go out and they beat Mercyhurst in the second game of the season, you know, tied at 9-9 late in the game. That's usually when Mercyhurst puts away teams. And Mount Olive goes ahead and puts away Mercyhurst, scoring the last four, winning 13-9. You know, I talked to Mike Murphy heading into that game, had big expectations, and, you know, they're not just happy to be there. You know, they have good plans. But, you know, they're for real. I mean, beating Mercyhurst, I don't care when it is, that is a big-time win. They still have plenty of work to do, however. And, you know, I think they may have more than three losses, and they may not get to the NCAA tournament just because it's so tough in the South. But this is definitely a team on the come. And, you know, and who am I to say? Maybe they will keep on surprising some teams because they have the schedule this year to get into the tournament and catch the committee's eye, whereas last year, you know, and Mike Murphy told me that he talked to some of the committee members, and they even told him, he said, you know, you could have beaten Limestone in the last game of the season, and you still wouldn't have gotten in. So now they're in a different spot, and, yeah, no, they're a very intriguing team, and Mike Murphy's done a great job there.
Jack, a pleasure to talk to you again. No more preseason speculations now that we're in the thick of things. The team that I want to talk to you about is going to be Queens U. Coming into the season, they were put in the top 10, suffered a crushing loss to Tampa first game of the season, then lost their second straight to Post, but have come back with two straight wins, and we talked about how important it was for Mount Olive to beat Mercyhurst. Queens has huge road bumps in their way with Limestone, Mercyhurst, and Mars Hill coming up in the next couple weeks. How important is this stretch of away games for Queens in order to solidify themselves?
You know, I'm actually writing a little bit about this in my notebook this week. I talked to Jim Fritz over Queens, and just about those first two losses, you know, when you sort of take a step back and look at it from a different perspective, they played Tampa, which was a national semifinalist last year, and LIU Post, which was a finalist last year, and they lost both those games. I think, you know, I don't think however good Queens was to expect them to beat both of those teams, especially at neutral sites. The only thing that sort of stuck out and sort of resonated with a lot of people was how badly they lost to Tampa, that 20-4 loss. And it struck me as well. I mean, because that was, I thought that was really a troublesome sign. But they responded by beating Coker in a league game. And then this overtime game against Pfeiffer, a good Pfeiffer team that was ranked last week, it was really impressive. It got them back on track. They're 2-2. And now they're going to have to play Limestone at Limestone on Wednesday, a game that they probably will not win. But again, they play such a strong schedule that he stacked them up where, you know, they could take maybe more losses than other teams can, because when the committee looks at the schedule and says, wow, these guys didn't duck anybody, I think they're going to get credit for that. Do they have to start winning a couple of them? Yeah, I think they can beat Limestone or lose to Limestone. But like last year, I think they'll need to beat Mercyhurst and stay ahead of them in the South if they really want to get back. So it's a big week for them. But, you know, Jim Fritz is a pretty confident guy. I think he likes his team. It'll be interesting how they do.
Jack, let's back up a week. And the big game of the year, the one that everybody was anticipating, was that Limestone-Tampa matchup. Limestone had come off a tough game against Lenoir Rhine. Tampa had a couple of real solid performances. And Limestone really took it to Tampa. Is this just a bad matchup for Tampa?
Tampa should be cursing out Lenoir Rhine after that game, because Lenoir Rhine got Limestone straight. I think if that game had been in the first game of the season when they played Tampa, I think Tampa may have been able to do some things. But that game against Lenoir Rhine that Limestone had really punched him in the mouth. J.B. Clark admitted as much. He thought that they were better than they were, and they needed that wake-up call. They got the wake-up call. They had a great week of practice. They locked down their defense after giving up 16 goals, and they completely shut down Tampa on the road. Just an impressive victory by any stretch. But I really think that Lenoir Rhine game really changed. And it may, you know, we'll see how the season plays out, but that may have changed the entire arc of the season for Limestone. Just getting one of those near misses that, you know, you still got the win, but it sort of set off some alarm bells and told this team maybe they're not quite as good as they thought they were, and they need to do some things. Tampa will be fine. I still think that they're going to be the second-best team in the South. You know, some other teams, maybe Seton Hill or Lake Erie may pop up. Maybe even Mercyhurst may get their act together. But I think Tampa's fine. But, yeah, that was certainly a message game for the top team in the South to the second-best team. There's still some gap there.
Jack, a lot of the coaches and analysts that we've brought on the show in the past couple weeks, we've talked to them about the earlier start in NCAA lacrosse and how the weather is affecting these games and the snow-covered fields and how it's putting the players at risk, things like that. But when it comes to the D2, D3 landscape, a lot of these teams up north where the weather is hitting the hardest haven't even started the bulk of their schedule yet. Lemoyne started this week. Post started last week. NYIT this week. Merrimack hasn't even started yet. Lake Erie hasn't played a game yet. So how are these Division II, Division III teams able to kind of avoid starting their season earlier as opposed to Division I, where these guys have started, have been playing for the past 2 weeks?
We're getting into some touchy subjects here because my opinion probably differs very much so from the Division I guys. One of the problems with Division I, from my perspective, that I see, you know, they're trying to get on television all the time, and television happens on the weekends for them most of the time. So they usually play one game a week. So when you play one game a week, you have to start earlier in order to make those happen. There's also a travel factor involved. Like, you know, if you're at Denver, I mean, you can't. Who are you going to play midweek? You know, you've got about three of those games you can do midweek. So there's also the traveling issue as well. Whereas Division II and Division III, you know, it's expected. You know, some of them play two games on a weekend, and at least two games during the week, usually until you get into the conference schedule. Then it kind of widens out a little bit. But as you alluded to before, you know, there's nothing mandates anybody having to start the season as early as they do. You know, you look at the NESCAC teams getting into Division III, they can't even start practicing until February 15th, and their first game is not till February 28th, you know, basically at the beginning of March. So, you know, and Tufts won the national championship last year. So there's no correlation between having to start earlier and if you'll be better or anything like that. These basically, you know, it's caveat emptor. You want to play these games early, that's fine, but this is what you're going to get some years. You're going to have bad winters. You're going to have crazy snowstorms, things like that. And, you know, yeah, it stinks. It stinks for the student-athletes and it stinks for the parents who make the trips and everything like that. But they've kind of made their own bed, and they don't necessarily have to do this. They have other options. They want to do it. It's great for me as a fan because it starts earlier. But I have very little, I don't know, remorse for them, you know, for what they're putting themselves through, because I don't think they necessarily have to. Division I, you know, I know it's more of a money game. So a little different set of standards, and I've heard talk that, you know, they want to extend their championship maybe out into June or something like that, and that's fine. But D2 and D3 won't go along. They'll still end at Memorial Day, just as, you know, baseball and NCAA Division I, they go off into July, it seems like. But, you know, Division II, Division III, it's not about the money. It's about schedules, academic schedules, and it'll never get approved to go anywhere past Memorial Day. So in terms of that, it'll be a big gap between D2, D3, and the Division I.
Jack, I want to bring the focus out west for just a moment. In about 2 weeks, we're going to be covering the matchup between Colorado State Pueblo and Adams State. What kind of a matchup can the fans expect out of those two teams?
You know, I don't think it'll be that much of a game. You know, we saw Colorado College play CSU Pueblo this past weekend. The final was 24-5. You know, Pueblo's a first-year program. They're going through the problems that every first-year program goes through, you know, getting kids, getting cohesion and things like that. excuse me. You know, I think Adams State is a more mature program. You know, they may not stack up against some of the Eastern D2 teams as well, but they're one of the more established Western teams. I think, you know, Adams State will be the prohibitive favorites, but this is all about just getting CSU Pueblo's feet underneath them, you know, getting acclimated to it. They're going to take their lumps. I think they probably know that. But they're not, I would guess they're not judging themselves on wins and losses. It's more about getting better and sort of the process right now. So, you know, it's great for Western Lacrosse. It's great to have somebody else on board and, you know, always looking for new teams to come on board. But in terms of a competitive game, I won't ruin it for you, but it may not be a tight affair.
Is there anything any of these Western teams can do to get themselves into the tournament this year?
Yeah, I mean, you got to run the table, and then you got to hope for a lot of teams in the South to trip and fall. I mean, just, you know, and I wrote a little bit about it, how the regions may shift after this year, and I think probably the WILA will get shifted up into the North as well, along with the ECAC, so it may change a little bit. But you got to play the schedule. You have to get out and play, you know, at least four or five solid, you know, tournament caliber teams, and you have to beat a preponderance of them. So it's tough sledding right now. Not impossible, but I think it may be a couple of years off. But I don't know much about Adams and Mesa this year, so maybe they've got something going that I don't know about. They both have two new coaches, so they could have some things going that I don't know about at this point.
Jack, as always, we'll appreciate it, and we look forward to a chat in the very near future about the goings-on in the Division III ranks.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Bye-bye.
That's Jack Coyne, our NCAA Division II, Division III analyst, and Jack does a great job. We talked about Trey and the number of teams he has to follow. Jack has an abundance of teams, 200 and some odd Division III teams that he has to be familiar with, and another 60 at the D2 level. These guys really put in a lot of work, Max.
Let me tell you, Dan, I know one way that a Western team could get into the NCAA tournament this year, and that would be if the Mavericks go down south, beat Limestone, and beat Tampa, and run the table in the WILA. Seems a little far-fetched as of right now, beating the reigning champs, but, I mean, that's a one scenario where you'd get a Western team in Colorado Mesa to bring themselves into the championship mix, and that's going to be a win over the reigning champs.
Well, first they'd have to beat the club teams like Colorado.
It's on the schedule. So.
It's on the schedule. You know what? Mesa could do it. It's a program definitely on the rise, seems to be bringing in a lot of quality talent. They're sitting in the polls at about number 20 in the also receiving votes. So when you look at the grand scheme of things, stranger things have happened. When we come back, we're going to shift the game indoors and talk a little in the National Lacrosse League with Brian Shanahan. You're listening to Lacrosse Talk on the Lax Worm Radio Experience.
To Lacrosse Talk on the Laxworm Radio Experience. I am Max Frater with host Dan Matthews. We have talked NCAA Division I and D2. We've also talked about club ball. Now we're going to move things indoors for our weekly NLL segment with Brian Shanahan. And Brian, for the past 8 weeks, the three of us have been bashing Calgary for not picking up a win. Lo and behold, they do the unthinkable and they take down Vancouver.
Yeah, Max, and really they didn't do a lot differently than they had done the other six games. It's just, they still got a lot of goals out of Curtis Dixon. He got 7 goals. Sean Evans was dangerous, and they had that every single game, but they just found ways to lose. This game, they found a way to win, and I think it was mostly Vancouver got into some penalty trouble, and Calgary made them pay on the power play. They were 5-for-7 on the power play, and the offense did what they can do in Calgary, and they were able to hold Vancouver to just 13 goals. But, I mean, even as late as the last couple of minutes, it was still – I don't think anyone was breathing a sigh of relief until that last buzzer went. So, we all knew that Calgary was too good to keep losing. Sooner or later, they were going to get a win, and this was their week. But it doesn't get any easier for them. They travel to Rochester next week to play the defending champions.
Shanny, the Mammoth got themselves back into the win column going on the road today and knocking off a New England team that just can't find a way to win the close game. How big was this game for the Mammoth? And talk a little bit about the performance of Adam Jones today.
Yeah, it was a huge win for the Mammoth after losing 3 games in a row, I believe. Yeah, they'd lost 3 games in a row, and they had to turn that around right away. And New England fought tooth and nail with them. And in fact, early in the game, it looked like the Mammoth were going to make it into a Lafford. It looked like they were going to run away with it. But New England just hung in there and kept it tight. And I thought we were going to get our third 13-12 game of the weekend. It ended up they got a late goal to make it 14-13. But you're right, Adam Jones is just fantastic. I was watching that game early on, and I think he scored the first 4 goals for Colorado to get them started. Can't remember what were his totals at the end of the day, but he was dynamite out there for Mammoth, scoring those big goals, and they need him doing that if they want to contend for first place this year.
Brian, I want to take it back to a week ago, and we're talking about New England here. If you're a lacrosse fan, if you're a sports fan, if you've watched SportsCenter within the past week, you saw the fight between Bill O'Brien and Stephen Keough in their matchup last week against Rochester. It was a beatdown of epic proportions on the side of Bill O'Brien laying it against Stephen Keough. But In your opinion, do you feel like this kind of exposure, because the video went viral to a lot of my friends who aren't lacrosse aficionados like us, and they saw it. Do you feel like this exposure is a good thing for the NLL to kind of get our name out there, or do you feel like it shows a bad side of the game?
I kind of feel like any publicity is not bad publicity for a league trying to get noticed. But, on the other side of the coin, I don't think we need to show fights to sell our game. But and I don't think it was like the league trying to put it out there to really sell it. I was kind of surprised, as you said, that it did go viral, because, you know, I know we showed the highlights. It was a good fight, but I think there's been fights like that in the league forever. And in fact, there are few and far between right now. You rarely, you only get a few fights a year, it seems like now. But I think you're on a fine line there. You don't want to. You want the league to get publicity to show how rough and tough it is, but I think it would be misleading if you were to try to sell it as this is what our game is like, because fights are relatively rare now compared to what they used to be years ago.
Shandy, let's talk a little bit about your Toronto Rock. They maintain the status quo. They keep winning. They actually beat New England in overtime on Friday night. How strong is this Toronto Rock team this year?
Well, I think that was one of their worst games so far this year, and I don't want to, lay all the blame on Toronto. You got to give a lot of credit to New England. Toronto Rock plays Edmonton next week, and a battle of first place teams. And I don't know if they were looking past New England a little bit or not, but it would be hard not to, think ahead that this is going to be a win, and next week's a big tough game. And I don't know if they were guilty of that, but New England came out and gave them everything they can handle. But I give the Toronto Rock credit for, what they had to do in the fourth quarter, because, they were down 10-5 at one point. And, when you're down 10-5 late in the game, there's not a lot of room for error. You've got to start scoring, and you can't trade goals. You got to pump in your goals and shut down. And they were able to do that, pretty much play perfect lacrosse over the last 7 or 8 minutes to get the tie. And pretty fitting, to get the winning goal by Josh Sanderson. And this kid, I shouldn't call him a kid anymore. He's like 38 years old. It's amazing. He is putting up the numbers that he put up 10 years ago, back when he used to break the, 100-point barrier. He's on a pace to break 100 points again. He's the top scorer in the NLL for points. And, he scored the winning goal for Toronto Rock that game in overtime. So, in a year that, his father died, his father's a legend, and everybody's hoping that, it's tough not to cheer for Josh Sanderson, but, what a season he's having so far with, just 8 games into the season, he's got 51 points to lead the league, including that winning goal on Friday night.
Toronto keeps their position at the top of the standings with a win over New England. I want to take a look at the other overtime game between the Nighthawks and the Bandits. This is Rochester's third straight win in the Thruway rivalry over Buffalo. And I believe they've won 5 of the past 6, with their only loss coming in overtime to Minnesota. Rochester came out to a little bit of a rocky start, which surprised a lot of us after seeing the three-in-a-row champs do what they do. Do you feel like they're finally starting to hit their stride again?
Oh, yeah, for sure. This game was even similar to the Toronto Rock game. Buffalo was up 11-6. In the third quarter, and Rochester had to, make a comeback to put it in overtime. But, lately, other than that blip in Minnesota where they lost in overtime, they've been a pretty deadly team, since their loss. I guess they went 0-2, and their second loss was an embarrassing one to New England, 17-7. But since then, they've looked like the Rochester team of old. And it's funny because the Buffalo Bandits right now are 4-5, not looking so good, but what you have to keep in mind is that 3 of their losses have come to Rochester. So Buffalo's probably just thankful that they're done with Rochester, and their record might be a lot better than we think if they hadn't had to play the defending champs 3 times. But Cody Jamison, the guy's one of the most clutch players in the NLL. He scored the last 3 goals in that game, including the winner in overtime. And there's not too many guys in the league that I'd prefer to have the ball in their stick with a game on the line than Cody Jamison. You know, we see him do it in NCAA with Syracuse. He's done it, you know, everywhere he's played in, you know, Canadian summer ball, NLL. This guy is just a clutch player with a game on the line.
Shanny, as always, we appreciate it. We'll look forward to doing it again with you next Sunday afternoon.
Excellent, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
That's Brian Shanahan, our NLL insider. And Max, we really do cover it all. We've talked D1, D2, MCLA, NLL. We're going to go back to D1 here on the other side of the break, and we're going to talk to Air Force head coach Eric Saramet. Quick update for you. The Cal Bears did beat Santa Barbara 10-8. That Santa Barbara Gaucho squad in a whole lot of trouble in the SLC conference in the MCLA, and something that they are not used to at all. When the poll comes out next week, I would imagine Santa Barbara very well could be out of the poll, falling all the way from number 7 to not being in very big favor with the pollsters in the MCLA.
What a nightmare start for the Gauchos. I mean, two straight losses to Stanford, and I'm sorry, was that Cal?
Cal.
And you've got Arizona State and Grand Canyon and the rest of the SLC coming up in your schedule. That's not what you want looking ahead coming in into the bulk of your schedule.
No, definitely a rough start for the Gauchos. It's been a little bit of a rough start for the Air Force Falcons. We'll talk to head coach Eric Saramet a little bit about that when we come back. You're listening to Lacrosse Talk on the Lax Worm Radio Experience. Back on Lacrosse Talk, Dan Matthews with Max Frater, and a big weekend of lacrosse in Colorado in spite of the weather. And a big thanks to the Air Force Academy and their head coach, Eric Saramet, for making sure that the Frontier Airlines Face-Off Classic
could be
completed.
Sorry you were having trouble. Please try again later. Goodbye.
Yes, we do not have head coach Eric Saramet like we thought we were going to, but a great weekend of lacrosse in Colorado. An up-and-coming program in Furman picking up just their second win in program history yesterday, a game that we called right here on the Laxworm Radio Experience. And a Kenesha squad really struggling to find itself in spite of having a fair amount of talent on that roster.
They do, and they have an MLL draft pick in Tim Edwards, who was their go-to guy ever since he's been on the team. I mean, he's the senior leader. He's the one with the ball in his stick when the clock is winding down. But it was the Edwards to Edwards show, I think, yesterday between Canisius and Furman. Him and his brother Jeff really were the catalysts in that offense, and everybody else had a hard time winning their individual matchups. I know a lot of Canisius's their offensive plan was to rotate their offense, spin the ball around until they got their short stick matchup on their attackman, take him to X and dodge from there. But Furman played fantastic defense. That's what really kept them in this game. Talking about something that I really stressed in our post game, the final 2 minutes of that game when Furman was man down and they were hanging on, clinging to that 8-8 tie. Canisius had a ton of opportunities, some open looks, great saves by Riley McDermott, and some great cause turnovers. Canisius, they had their fast break opportunities too, just unable to put the ball in the back of the net. We ran into Coach Mearns after the game as well, and he had a very heavy heart. He knew that his team could have easily come away with that one if some balls had bounced in another way and some things had gone their way, but they didn't, and Furman picked up their second win in program history.
Yeah, they did, and picking up their first win of the season today was Air Force beating Randy Mearns' Canisius team 13-6. I do believe that we've got head coach Eric Saramet on the line with us. Coach, how are you today?
Doing better today than I was yesterday.
I certainly understand. Coach, it was a rough start to the season for you guys, 0-3 after yesterday's game. Talk a little bit about the transition from yesterday's game to today's game and what was different for your squad enabling you to win your game today against Canisius.
Well, you know, I talked to our guys in the locker room this morning, and I said, hey, you know, we might be 0-3, but we also played, in my opinion at the time, when we played Duke, they're defending national champs.
and then we played number one Denver. So we lost to two, you know, in my mind, number one teams. And, you know, the Marist loss was disappointing for us, but our kids play hard. We're still figuring out who we are as a new group here this year, and that'll be a work in progress as we go through the season. But, you know, we've lost to, you know, two top, you know, top of the pecking order teams here. So I don't feel that bad about it. You know, it's a good experience for our kids, and our goal is always to get better as the season goes along.
Coach, thank you for joining me and Dan on the show. I know it's been a very busy weekend for you guys, so we appreciate you taking some time out of your day. Just with your guys' transition from being in the ECAC, which disbanded, and now you're sitting as an independent in NCAA Division I, do you feel like it magnifies those individual matchups that you guys had early on this season in a game against Duke, in a game against Denver, some other prominent teams that are coming up on your schedule? Do you feel like it makes those games that much more important because you don't have a conference championship you can win?
Yes. You know, that's it's fairly obvious that those games, you know, are that much more important. You know, in the bigger picture, again, it's, you know, certainly in the mission at the academy to use athletics to develop these officers of character once they graduate. You know, that's our main mission here. But, you know, it's a little disappointing that we weren't secured in a conference this year. But, you know, we got to do what we got to do to have as successful of a season as we can in this season and give our kids the best experience we can.
Coach, while not playing in a conference this year, you're certainly doing everything that you can to prepare your team for conference play next year, playing several games within the Southern Conference, including a matchup next week against Furman. And as we know, Furman picked up only their second win in program history yesterday over Canisius. What did you see out of that Furman ball club that is a point of focus for you guys as you prepare for next week's game?
You know, I'll be honest with you. Me personally, I didn't spend that much time watching them. You know, we were running around making sure that the event was pulled off without a hitch. You know, we'll get film of them and watch them. My assistants got a good eye on them. You know, what caught my eye is they had an outstanding goalie. I thought their goalie play was excellent today. I thought those kids, their team was pretty tough too. They didn't back down to a Denver team. They played them pretty hard today. So, you know, I think all those teams in the Southern Conference are going to get good. Quickly, and you know, it's going to be, I think that's going to be a great conference for us. You know, I again, after the game today, when I addressed the team, I said, look, next weekend is our first conference game. You know, try to get that rivalry going, try to get us thinking that those games are a bit more important to us this season, starting the season. So I think Furman, obviously, with Coach Mead at the helm there, that they're going to be prepared. They're going to be ready to roll against us next week.
Coach, I want to take a look at what a day in the life of a lacrosse player for the Air Force Academy is like. I had the opportunity to play NCAA lacrosse across the state over in Grand Junction at Colorado Mesa. I know what kind of time commitment it is to play a sport in the NCAA and handle your academics, but it's so much more when you're at the Air Force Academy. What are your players going through with not only handling academics and handling lacrosse, but also training to be a part of the United States Air Force?
Yeah, I mean, there's an extra demand on them. There's an extra expectation on them. You know, for example, this weekend we had what we call the Silver Weekend here at the Academy, and that's it entailed some inspections and dorm room inspections and things like that, you know, basic white glove type stuff. You know, so our kids had to be prepared to get their rooms in what we call a SAMI and spend all night cleaning, and that usually takes place Friday night, you know, in ready for the Saturday morning inspection. So, you know, it's kind of hard when you're playing a game on Saturday and our kids are out cleaning the rooms till midnight, make sure they pass that inspection and also be able to focus on the cross and getting the rest that they need. So, I mean, that's just one example, but, you know, we don't use that as a crutch. We don't use that as an excuse. I try to use that as a positive and say, yeah, you are different. And that's what makes you better. It makes you better because you can handle all of these things and you're held to a higher standard. So it's not an excuse for us. I'd like to think that it empowers us some.
I love it when we get to hear the kids in the background, because it just shows everybody that you're also a dad. And
yeah, we got some, you know how my situation is.
Exactly. Coach, you will play six of the seven teams that are in the Southern Conference this year. You played number seven last year and knocked off Richmond, earning a bid into the national tournament. When you look at this Southern Conference at a whole, you're going to be part of building what is now lacrosse's newest conference. What will it take to make this conference successful and competitive on the national landscape?
Well, you know, I think I got a tremendous respect for a lot of the coaches in the conference. I mean, all those schools seem to be supporting those programs at a very competitive level. The coaching staffs, for the most part, are fairly young, you know, ambitious guys. So I know that they're going to do all the extras needed. That takes a lot of energy. That's the recruiting. That's the extra stuff in the locker room with the team and team building types of things. You know, obviously, Coach Mead has a tremendous resume. He's probably, you know, the godfather of the group. But I think, you know, for us and the ability to get some at-large wins, to strengthen our conference is going to be important, so that not just we're playing just to get into the NCAAs, but post the first round game. I think that's all stuff that we as a group will be considering as we do some out of conference scheduling.
Coach Sermet, last question for you. You've had the opportunity to play two of the better teams in the entire landscape of Division I lacrosse. What do you take away from the two games you played against Duke and Denver moving forward into the bulk of your schedule?
Expectation, you know. If we want to, you know, I'd like to think stay at a high level competitively nationally across the country, you know, that's the expectation. You play those teams early, you get a real sense of what it takes to play at the next level. You know, I thought starting two freshmen at attack for us, freshman at close defense, freshman short stick D-mini. You know, I think those guys are getting some instant experience to, you know, to set that expectation as we, you know, train in the years to come and obviously to finish out the season and have a great season and take some of that momentum with us. That's the expectation, is that those guys, you know, they're pretty crisp, they're pretty pretty sharp with their stick work, and the game is a fast game. So getting those experiences under our belt hopefully will take us far, you know, as we finish the season.
Eric, we sure appreciate it. I don't know if you know this or not, but we'll be putting your games on internet radio later on in the season. We've got your game against Jacksonville, and we also have your game against Navy, which we are both really looking forward to that game and being able to bring that one to the armed forces all over the world. So we'll have plenty more time to have conversation with you as the season wears on.
That's great. I really appreciate it. That Navy game is going to be certainly a highlight of our season, our regular season this year. So, yeah, I appreciate the support and, you know, appreciate being on the line with you tonight.
Sure. Thanks, Coach.
Thank you, Coach. Good luck.
Thank you.
That's head coach and father, Eric Sermet, at the United States Air Force Academy, the Fighting Falcons. And, you know, what a weekend it's been for us, Max. We have another whirlwind weekend next weekend, and just the first two of what are many to come as we look forward to lots of live play-by-play and continuing to bring lacrosse talk to the masses each and every week.
We hope that you guys are looking forward to the same. Got a taste of Division I lacrosse this week with Furman and Canisius. Now we're going to go up and take a look at the top tier of MCLA D1, and that's going to be Boston College and Colorado State. So tune in to Laxworm Radio to hear the replay of this show and to hear us live coming up on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, can't wait. Should be exciting. BC and Colorado State, that one at 3 p.m. Eastern time next Saturday on the Laxworm Radio Experience. Want to make a special thank you to our guests, Mark Dixon, Trey Lanthier, Brian Shanahan, Jack Coyne, and Air Force head coach Eric Sermet. Also a shout-out to John J.P. Ponest for all of his efforts that he puts forth in making sure that our broadcasts come off without a hitch. For Max Frater, I'm Dan Matthews. Until next week, so long, everybody.